everything in life is really good right now. Why am I feeling like I shouldn't be here? Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Made It Out. Today's guest has paved the way for us femme lesbians online. It's YouTube star and host of Staying Up Podcast, Cammy Scott.
That was so generous. Thank you.
It's so true.
Paved the way.
The original femme les.
Thank you. Oh my God. It just makes me sound so old. The OG. Yeah. AD.
You just had it figured out way before any of us.
Yeah, I really did. I got lucky. Yeah. I got really lucky in a sense. In hindsight.
Today we're talking about mental health. Yes, and your journey with your mental health. But can we take it back to, like, where did you grow up? What was your family life like?
Yeah, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and it's so funny. I feel like previously when I would answer this question, it was like, childhood was so great. It was typical. My parents, very loving, still together to this day. I had an older brother who's very protective, very sweet. And it's only been recent years that I think with an adult brain looking back was like, okay, it wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. My family didn't really talk about emotions a lot, which wasn't a problem at the time to me. It was just the way it was. I didn't know anyone was any differently, but I think it really made me hold back and kind of shut down emotions. So great family. I'm so lucky. They were so wonderful, but I think everyone kind of fucks up their kids a little bit.
Of course.
Yeah. And I think I've recently realized my issues.
I feel like we all kind of grow up and we look at our parents and we start to be like, they're just people.
Yeah. You're not perfect. You are little humans. Like, I'm the age now that my mom was when she had me and had already had my brother. I'm like, my God, I just don't even know what that would have felt like. And they're just, yeah, they're, now that they're my friends, I can see that they're not invincible.
Yeah. I also feel like it was kind of a generational thing.
Like, oh, definitely.
In that generation, they were taught, like, you don't talk about anything outside of your home.
Yeah.
You keep family business.
Yeah.
And you can see that. Like, I don't think that's just your parents. I think that's very normal.
Totally.
For parents of people our age.
Yeah. That's why I think the pendulum kind of swung harder the other way of, like, talking to your kids about everything. I feel like a lot of millennials and a little bit older having kids are like, I'm going to explain every emotion to my kid, and maybe sometimes overkill a little bit.
Yeah, we're overcorrecting.
Yeah, because we're like, I didn't even know what emotions were growing up. I didn't know that you could feel sad and place words to it. So now we're trying to overcompensate a little bit.
But. Yeah. When do you feel like your first time struggling with your emotions was?
I feel like this is a similar question to, like, when did you first know you liked girls? It's I didn't in the moment realize that I was struggling, but now hindsight, it's really shocking. I was thinking about this on the drive over, and I remember being really little and I would look in the mirror. We had this bathroom door that was all a mirror, and I would disassociate, and I didn't know what it meant, but this is going to sound really crazy, but I would look at myself and I didn't know what anything was, but I think I believed in reincarnation. I'm like probably 7 in this instance.
Oh my gosh, you were advanced.
I didn't know.
You lived a lot of lives.
I was messed up. I'm like staring in the mirror and I'm like, this sounds so crazy. I'm like, who are you? Like, I know someone's in there. And I think I started to believe that instead of how reincarnation typically is seen as you die and then you become, your soul goes into a different being and then you come back. I saw it as like little souls popping around body to body. And because you were in their body, you got their brain. And because you have their brain, you have their memories. So you wouldn't really know. And I felt like I'd cracked the code. And I was like, I know you came from somewhere else. And I'm so insane as a little kid looking in the mirror being like, I don't know who I am. And I think it was actually me just, it was like a coping mechanism for not knowing myself and just not understanding at all who I was and what I thought and felt. And I just remember like mulling that over all the time, which is weird.
Well, no, but that kind of awareness brings anxiety. I mean, that's existential dread at 7 years old.
Exactly.
So I think like the more aware you become or the less distracted you are with things.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the more those types of thoughts hit you and you're like, what the fuck actually is this?
Yeah.
So to have that from such a young age, it kind of makes sense why you had some sadness or like anxiety.
Yeah, just complete confusion. And then I remember not like there, I'd have waves of just not having joy from a lot of things when I was very young. And I remember thinking it was, I was just lazy. I was like, I'm just a lazy kid. And I had asthma. So a lot of sports I would play, I couldn't play them for very long. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm just a lazy kid. I don't care to do anything but watch TV. And then I realized I would go through spurts of finding a lot of joy in little things. Like a blade of grass would make me excited. And then the next day I'm like, nothing in my life matters. Mm. So I started to notice that kind of swing of emotion and not understand it, kind of assume everyone was feeling that. And just, I just remember being really confused. And then I would take it out on myself and just kind of, I was really judgmental of myself when I was younger. I remember being really aware of my body and comparison. Like I was just too young to care. And I don't know, I felt like a little adult brain with all the worries and fears of an adult in a little kid body.
Totally.
And being like, this isn't right. Totally. What's happening here?
Were you just like really aware of adult conversations or do you think this all came internally? Because I'm the oldest and I feel like I was super aware of my body and things like that. But I think it was because I was intimately involved in a lot of conversations that were going on.
Yeah, I really relate to oldest sibling mentality, even though I'm the baby. I also think my brother was an emotional kid and he went through some stuff. And my parents would always be like, oh, Cam's the easy one. She's just, she's happy and she's positive and she doesn't cause any problems. And I didn't feel that way, but I would hear them say that. And I think I learned young how to mask feelings and emotions. So we just didn't talk about stuff. If I was feeling sad, I didn't say that. I didn't bring it up. Nobody asked me about it. No one was recognizing it. So I was like, okay, that's my role in this family, to be like easygoing, never causing problems, not getting into trouble. So I'm not going to do anything bad. And if I do, I'm sure as hell not getting caught because I have to be the good one.
Right.
Yeah. So little adult stuck in the kid body and just being aware of like if my parents were struggling with stuff or my brother was, I was just, I felt like I had to be the glue to keep it together, keep the peace, keep everything good.
Yeah. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
How often do you think were the swings? Was it day to day or was it just like?
I don't know. I don't have a lot of memories. My memory is so bad. And I don't know if it's like a trauma response or what it is, but I don't know. I think they were heavier as a kid. I think they lasted longer and I just had no idea what it was. I thought that was my baseline. Whereas an adult, I kind of know that my baseline is good and happy. Then it felt like when I felt good, that was the rarity. Mm-hmm. And that was exciting, but I was like, oh, it's not going to last. So I don't know. I don't really feel like I have memory of it going back and forth much, but yeah, I'm not sure.
Because as a kid, it is just so normal.
Yeah.
Like I remember I used to just lay in bed and worry and worry and worry about, I mean, I felt like I worried more than my parents worried.
And it's like, what was there to even worry about in those moments? It's so weird, but it feels heavier than it does sometimes now as an adult.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's so weird. Always felt like my base.
Yeah.
But you're right, because we weren't talking about it. I was like, oh, this is everybody lays up at night and worries about everybody and their family dying. And, you know, just like that's so regular.
Yeah.
And now as an adult that now that I've had the time to like slow down, I'm like, oh, I think I have anxiety.
That's not normal to have to be stressed about every little thing when I'm a child.
Yeah. Or even, I mean, as an adult, it's like that not everybody has to live that way. But I think because of this, like what we're taught growing up, that you're not supposed to be talking about these things. We just had no fucking clue. And now we're all sitting on couches like this, figuring it out. Like, wait, like, what? You feel that way too?
Wait a minute. Let's talk about this. Yeah. It's like suppressing it to everyone around you and yourself.
Yeah.
Like I suppress everything to myself too. I couldn't even understand how I felt. Cause I was like, nope, don't feel it. Don't think about it. If I would start thinking about it, I would just cut myself off. I got really good at just like numbing myself, which is not healthy at all. But at the time it felt very healthy. It's like, oh, I can put on this front and be happy and be a good time and everyone can like me. And then when I'm alone, I can be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What's going on in this world?
Totally. Well, that's what I was going to say. It still comes out
at
some point. So what was that looking like? Like,
I don't really have a memory of like thinking, oh, this is like a mental health thing I need to work through until way later in life, because I started dating my first girlfriend very young. I think we met when I was like, I don't know, 13, 14. And we dated until I was like 21. Mm-hmm. And I realized that because I wasn't expressing my feelings to myself or other people, I would have very codependent relationships where now, whether it's a friend or a girlfriend, you're my everything and I feel safe with you. So I'm going to just word vomit everything I haven't even told myself. And then now you have to take on that burden because I'm not going to share it with anybody else. And then it makes you really need this person. So even if they're horrible to you or they're not right for you, I'm going to stay because I can't lose my one solid person. Mm-hmm. So I think that created a really toxic kind of relationship that I thought, oh, this is love. Like, I should have somebody that I can give my all to and knows everything about me. And they're the one person I feel safe around. But if they're the only outlet you have, it becomes incredibly unhealthy. Yeah. And like, that's when I started realizing, this is not good. I really do need to figure that out. And in like high school and college, in that first relationship, that was just so bad that I knew I wanted out of that. I knew there had to be something better. Mm-hmm. And made it out.
You made it out. Well, how did you? So did you start to have those conversations? How did you start to do the work?
I didn't at first. I got really lucky and my ex had cheated on me for the umpteenth time. And I was finally like, I have to get out of this. This mm-hmm. is not good. And there has to be something more. I think I was getting older where I was ready to move away. And my girlfriend was younger than me. So she wasn't ready to move away yet. And her family was all there. And I was like, this, something's not right. There has to be something more here. So we broke up and that was really the changing point for me mm-hmm. where I was like, oh, I can like myself. And what she does isn't a reflection of who I am. It's a reflection of who she is. Mm-hmm. And that was hard and isolating at first. Then I was just kind of like a recluse and I would try not to get really close with people. One, because I wasn't ready to fully come out to everyone, new people especially, because I just didn't want to have a conversation.
Yeah.
So I would just keep to myself in college. My like biggest regret in life is that I didn't enjoy college. Mm-hmm. I didn't let myself be loose and have friends and have fun. But it gave me time to do the work on myself and have those hard conversations with myself and really get there and understand that I wanted more. But I still wasn't linking what I was going through with anxiety or depression. Mm-hmm. I was linking it to the bad relationship. And once right. I'm out of this, everything will be good.
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
What part of it was also the fact that you were holding the sexuality that secret?
Yeah, I think it was a big part of it. I don't think it was a reason for the depression because looking back, I had it when I was too young to have a sexuality. Everyone had cooties. Everyone was gross. I didn't like anybody. So I think it was always there, but it was kind of heightened from that secretive relationship. I was already hiding so much. Mm-hmm. So then to hide what I thought was like this big love just added to it so much. And then, like I said, the leaning on one person, it just made it, I felt so alone. Anytime we were in a fight, I couldn't tell anyone about it.
Yeah.
So, or if we were in a fight and I was feeling really low, I couldn't share that with anybody. So I think it just really heightened things, but I don't think it was the root cause of sure. any anxiety or depression.
Yeah. But it makes sense. I think that having to hide anything in your life is like, that's going to manifest in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't understand how criminals and murderers can keep these big secrets, because just keeping liking girls was eating away at me. I'm like, how do people spend their whole lives lying about these big, horrible things?
Yeah.
When I was dying over just keeping a secret that I love somebody, I'm like, this shouldn't be a big deal, but it really does. And I don't think people realize how much it trickles into every corner of your life too.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a lot.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing. I came out like later. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting thing to have to merge these two lives, because I felt for so long I was living two very separate kind of identities. And
a little Hannah Montana action there.
Kind of, yeah. And you don't realize, you kind of like, you tell these little white lies mm-hmm. or you tell these like things, and you keep everything so compartmentalized to kind of just organize in your brain.
Yeah.
And then when you're out and you're like, okay, I can be happy and I can be myself, it's almost like weird to not
yeah,
want to do those things, the compartmentalize and the
you're
little.
You're so used to it at that point.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even begin to merge those little parts of your life together?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it really does like seep in and it mm-hmm. makes you be like so hypervigilant. And yeah. that can also cause like anxiety and stress and depression and all of these things.
Yeah, so. That's so overwhelming. Even if yeah. you feel good about who you are and ready to embrace that, it's rewiring your brain. That's been, those pathways have been paved over and over and over again for almost 30 years. Yeah. What, how do you change that?
Yeah. Yeah. yeah it's definitely a process.
Mm-hmm. How you doing?
Yeah. Matilda, big help.
Good.
So how, I guess, when did you start to reach out? Cause you said you were super isolated in college.
Yeah.
When did you finally kind of start to branch out? And
I feel like really only recently. Mm. I always describe myself as I'm a lot of people's best friends and no one's mine. Mm. Like, I'll be the sounding board. People come to me for advice and think that they know me really well because we're talking about these really deep things. But I'm only sharing the little bits and pieces of me that I feel safe with. So I did that for so long. I moved to LA in like 2015. Met new friends, had a great support system. And I was realizing I would only open up if people asked me very direct questions. Mm. I don't know. I didn't want to burden people. I just didn't feel like that was my role in a friendship. I was like, I'm supposed to be the comfort person, easy. You vent to me about your problems. I don't have problems.
Well, that's also what you were in your family.
Yeah, always.
So that makes so much
it's
sense.
Been like such a hard system to break of mm-hmm. like, I'm not the burden just by sharing my feelings. And moved out here and I was in a relationship and didn't really realize how much my depression was impacting that relationship because mm-hmm. I didn't have words for it yet. As even though I was like full adult, I feel like mental health was a conversation happening everywhere. And I was an advocate for mental health. I'm like, yeah, talk about your feelings, but not practicing what I preach at all. Mm-hmm. So it was really only until probably 2020 that I truly faced that I have stuff to work through and that I need to take more steps than just, I don't know, journaling or whatever I was doing. Yeah.
Was there a catalyst?
Yeah, I think so. I started dating my now wife, Taryn, kind of right when the pandemic started. We started dating at the end of 2019. She was living in San Francisco. I was living in LA and we accidentally on purpose got quarantined together. And it was so exciting. I had known her forever. I think we had both kind of had crushes on each other throughout this and we were finally both single. It was really just a peaceful time. And I'm such a homebody that where COVID was awful for some people being stuck at home, I was stoked about it. I'm like, I don't have to make up excuses and I don't have to cancel plans. I can't come because of COVID. But then I started noticing that when I used to get really down like clockwork every month mm-hmm. and realized that it was related to my period and later kind of self-diagnosed having PMDD. But then I had a few months, I think it was like August, September, 2020, where we had been locked down for a while and I just felt so low. I remember I was in the shower one day and I just sat on the floor and I was like, I don't want to kill myself, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if like something just happened and I wasn't here. Yeah, it was just weird. I felt like I wasn't in my own body. Like I felt like I was just watching myself feel this way. And I was like, that's not good. Like everything in life is really good right now. Why am I feeling like I shouldn't be here? Like, and I knew I wasn't going to act on it. And I knew I didn't want to die. I just remember thinking, if I found out that I was about to die, I don't think I would be scared. I think it would be kind of like a good thing. And that just freaked me out really bad. And I remember Taryn coming in the bathroom and I was sat on the floor and she's like, you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm good. Oh. And I think she obviously knew, no, you're not good. And I'm so lucky I had her in that moment because she has struggled with mental health from an early age and she had really wonderful parents who got her the help she needed. And she's done so much of the work that she was able to be kind of like that tough love that I needed mm-hmm. and that I had never received where she was like, you have to go to therapy. You have to talk to somebody. You cannot deal with this. And I'm here. I'm not leaving. I'm going to help you through this. I can't be your only crutch though. Like there's only so much that I can do. And I think she had really good boundaries with it and was really just like supportive and loving and reassuring that it made me feel safe to kind of like break down all those walls, not just to her and to friends, but to myself too. It was like the first time where I was like, oh, I can face this and I can actually like think about it and talk about it and figure out what's going on. So
that's so beautiful that you had her. It's almost like you needed to see it modeled.
Yes.
100%. It's like that reparenting almost where it's like, hey, things can be different.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really beautiful.
Yeah,
but
lucky.
It also had to be really confusing because it's like this time where Taryn's your wife. Like,
so confusing. At the time we were just dating. I think that's why it felt
worse.
You
were so happy.
Like, yeah. I think that's why it really crippled me. I was like, wait a minute. Everything's finally good. I have everything I wanted. We were like talking about buying a house together. Everything was good. And that's when it got really confusing. Because before then, I could relate it to my period and be like, okay, this is going to pass. It's circumstantial. My hormones are out of whack. Give it a week. I'm going to be fine. I think what really happened is I went through a pretty awful end to my relationship before Taryn and was just kind of going through hell from my ex, and I can deal with really big things happening. My friend and I always call it like the spilled milk. It's like the little things that get us, but the big things we're like, that's nothing. We're fine. And I think I thought that's how I dealt with stuff. But then afterwards I was like, oh, now that this chapter's over and I'm free from this person, all those emotions are catching up to me. All those things that I didn't let myself feel and said, I'm okay. Everything's good. And I genuinely thought I was okay. I think once I had a second to breathe, I was like, got hit by it. So I think it was feeling so safe allowed me to feel the times I didn't. So it wasn't the circumstance I was in, it being COVID and being with Taryn. It wasn't like all the beautiful things in my life in the circumstances of COVID. It was, oh, I'm allowing myself to like have 30 years of emotions and trauma catch up to me. And I'm kind of being hit by all of it at once.
Wow.
So I don't know.
I have never heard that said like that. And I have to just tell you, I went through the same thing when I got with Mathilde.
Yeah.
And it was like this thing of, I am in the best relationship I've ever been in my life.
Yeah.
I like everything is so great.
What the hell's wrong with me?
I have nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
But pairing what you just said with something my therapist said, where things kind of come back when your system feels safe to allow things to come back.
Exactly.
I've started to have like repressed trauma blocked memories come up, and I am now understanding that it's because I'm in this place of like, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm okay. And I can deal with this now. And that makes so much sense. I had always thought that it was just because I had nothing else to worry about.
Yeah.
I think that's the way I've been like putting it as like
stuff almost.
Yeah. Like finding a relationship was such a focus for me. And like all of these other things were such a focus. And then when I got into a relationship it was like, okay, that's not my focus anymore. I found this person and everything is settled and everything is slowed down. I thought that it was like my brain just didn't have stuff to focus on, but now I'm realizing it's just because my system is safe, which, wow, that is like, this is therapy for me. Thanks for being here.
I honestly, until I like said it, I didn't even know what I was saying until I said it. It's like that really just clicked for me too. Cause I think I thought like you of my baseline is to be worried and to have all these things. So now that I don't have it, my brain's going to look for something maybe, but I really don't think that was the case for me. And I've had therapists say that. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm really good at suppressing stuff. I don't think that's what's going on here. But yeah, I think it's just you feel safe and it all, the volcano kind of erupts and you can actually process stuff for the first time.
So do you think that you've now gotten in real time better at processing your emotions, feeling your emotions, speaking them out loud?
Yeah. I mean, it's absolutely not perfect. I'm still really working on it. And I kind of, the more I fix it, the more new things I find that I'm trying to fix. But yeah, so much better. Even just being able to say to Taryn, like, hey, I'm feeling really low. The other day I was feeling really off and I was like sat upstairs on a chair in our bedroom, and I just texted her and I was like, if you have a minute, can I have a hug? And she came up and was like, are you feeling a little off? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, maybe just cry for a minute. Aww. And I was like, I don't need to cry. And as soon as she gave me that permission, I just like started bawling. And the way she treats it as like a non-event, like there's nothing wrong with you. It's okay. Like sometimes emotions just hit and it's okay. Instead of being like, whoa, what's going on? What's wrong? Like, why are you so upset? She just really lets me feel and process, and it feels natural and normal. So yeah, I've definitely gotten better at that. But there are still times where I feel so sad and I'm like, what's wrong with me? And it takes me being out of it to look back and be like, okay, duh, we know what's happening
right.
here.
Right.
We know we get depression. We know we have PMDD. But in the moment, sometimes I really get stuck in it and just forget everything I've learned.
When I was a kid, emotions were made to feel like something that were wrong. Mm-hmm. Or like, because I have always been super expressive yeah. with my emotions. There's no hiding them. And they come on and they're there and whatever the repercussions are.
Oh, me too.
That's it, you know? And I think that was something that was like scolded or reprimanded. Mm-hmm. And I think being in a relationship where it's like, emotions are okay. And being like reparented in that way of just like, it's going to be okay. And even if there's this blow up, we're going to get through it. And that can be so healing.
Yeah.
And that's what it sounds like Taryn is doing with you, which is so beautiful.
I feel like sometimes when you're told your emotions aren't allowed, they almost get bigger because you're like, oh, so to be heard, I have to be really extreme for you to take this seriously. Mm-hmm. So it's so funny. I feel like kids who were kind of made to suppress emotion almost go the complete opposite way and then have these big blow ups because you're like, okay, the only way for me to be seen and heard and listened to is if I go 0 to 100.
I have to make a big fucking deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you get me now?
You hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Talk to me about the PMDD.
So I self-diagnosed myself with PMDD years ago. I am like, I love a little Google schmoogle moment. If there's something I don't know, I'm like, the internet's free. Look it up. So one of these deep Google moments where I was like, why every month do I want to kill myself? Is this normal? Somehow it led me down the path of PMDD because I also had really painful periods. Like, I was like, this is not normal PMS that I hear other people talking about. This is really intense. So I just kept typing in my symptoms and I kept a little note page in my phone of things I would go through trying to figure out what is happening, because I go from being so happy to kind of a complete numbness. It's not even a sadness for me, depression. It's nothing. Mm. Like, I don't want to watch a movie. I don't want to do anything. I want to just lay in bed and stare at a wall. So I would just, I would look into that. I would see patterns happening and finally stumbled upon PMDD, which there's not a lot of studies on. There's not a lot of information on. A lot of people, most women are self-diagnosed with it if they have it, or later diagnosed with just depression in general that's heightened during their period, which is what I now believe that I have. Mm-hmm. And I think the knowledge of it was at first enough to deal with it. I didn't immediately seek out counseling. I didn't get on medication. I still didn't want to talk to somebody else. I was like, I can handle this. Mm-hmm. We will figure this out on our own. We don't need anybody else. So yeah, I would just Google and figure out what can I do. And there's really wasn't much I could do myself. There's some holistic approaches you can take to it, but it's kind of fickle. What works for one person might not work for the other. So I really just like armed myself with the knowledge of, okay, this is coming. It's going to happen. Go through the wave. Feel it out, and then in a week, you're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And that was my coping mechanism for years with my PMDD.
So Matilde, her therapist, and my therapist have all diagnosed me with PMDD.
You're not self-diagnosed.
I'm the last one to know.
They're like, I think there's something going on here.
I'm sure my mother would say the same thing. My period has always been just such a challenge for me. I used to take it out on my mom.
Yeah.
I would blow the fuck up at her. And
me
I think
too.
With age, I've gotten like better. Mm-hmm. But then in my relationships, it was like that time of month.
Mm-hmm.
We gonna fight.
Yeah. My mom said her and my dad would start to write on a calendar. They would like circle the date because every month they would get a big fight over nothing. And the next day she'd be like, oops. That was definitely my bad. So they just used to know this day or these couple days, steer clear. Don't, like, let's walk on eggshells. Let's not fight, which isn't probably the best coping mechanism for it. But at least they were aware and could be like, we're not going to have this big fight right now.
Yeah. I think that's like where Matilda and I are at with it. I'm like, all right, like we know it's coming.
You're like, just give me some grace. Just like, I'm going to be a little kooky.
Yeah. And she's so great about it. But also I think I'm coming around to the fact of like, okay, this is something that.
Awareness can only take you so far.
Yeah.
We got to take the next steps. Is that where you're at right now, where it's just, I know it's happening, but what do we do about it?
I think like the knowledge is really helping because then I don't take it as like personal.
You keep reminding yourself.
Yeah. Like, okay, I'm not a fucking nut job. Like, this is just happening, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm only a nut job this one day a month.
I'm only a partial nut, not a full nut. So,
yes. And then I think the Super Bowl Sunday, I had a really, I've never felt like so low.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is not normal.
Spooked
and
it
was
you
like,
enough.
Yeah. And it's usually like very patterned for me.
Yeah,
it's I'll have like the blow up and then I get really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Super Bowl Sunday, I got a little bit too low and I was like, this isn't normal. So I am kind of in that journey of like starting to think about medicine, but also, you know, we were talking about this last night and it's like so hard when you've never viewed yourself as someone with like mental health struggles to then make that switch and be like, okay, I need to start having the conversation about medicine.
I can handle this. Yes. I can take care of it on my own.
Yes. Yeah. And especially because before Matilda, I was single for like a year and a half. And I was like in such a routine. I was the girl that was like doing yoga and hiking and meditating and journaling and doing mushrooms in the park. And like, that was my life.
Yeah.
And so I felt like I was so healed, you know, so healthy. And so this and
you
that.
Had your individual routine.
Yes. And then when you get into a relationship, you find out, okay, it's really easy to deal with it when you're on, you know, by yourself. But when someone is reflecting this shit back to you, it's like, you have not fixed this. And so I think I'm going through that process of being like, okay, this is still there.
It's a really easy thing to let go because unlike depression where it can come on and stay on for months or years at a time, it might feel like the worst day of your life and you might have the lowest lows for a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's very easy to forget about it. As soon as you feel good again, you're like, it wasn't that bad, which I'm sure Matilda would say differently. Yes. it is that bad. But you can convince yourself like, it's okay. I have this under control. It's not my day to day. I'll just deal with it. I'll deal with it every month. So as tough as it is being in the relationship and it feels more intense, it is good to have that mirror to be like, no, I do need to actually figure this out and work on it a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you take that step to start to move toward?
So I hate doctors. My wife has health anxiety, but in the way of like, she will go to the doctors for a bruise just to make sure there's not anything going on. And I'm the opposite of like, I don't need to go. I'm a self-diagnosed queen over here. I'm like, I got this. But I am hopefully going to have a baby in the next year or so. So I've decided it's not just my health. It's like our future child's and I can't be selfish. So I've started to go to the doctors more. And the first time I went, I made Taryn go with me and they just like ask you stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what to talk about. They're like, how you feeling? I'm like, fine. Like, what? And then finally, Taryn was like, you know, you can talk about your depression. And I'm like, what's depression? What do you mean? And I was like, okay,
babe.
And I'm like, shh, 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 we don't talk about that. And finally, I was at the doctor's one time and I was like, oh, there's one more thing I want to talk about. And I let in of like, I have really bad periods. They're really painful. And then eventually I was like, I also want to kill myself during that.
Is that normal? So, by the way.
Yeah. And we went over everything and I had just done somewhat of a hormone test. And she's like, listen, we could run 80 more hormone tests to see if there's something you need to be taking to swing this. But once we talked about enough, she's like, I can 100% guarantee that you have PMDD.
Mm.
It's not diagnosed a lot because people just don't have the information on it. But I see it a lot in people and everything you're describing is textbook PMDD. Let's just try to go on Lexapro. And she's having me take it on my luteal phase. So I'm 2 weeks on leading up to my period, then 2 weeks off. And she's like, let's see how that goes. We can adjust it a few days later, a few days earlier, depending on how you feel until we find the right levels for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing that for a while. I think it was kind of like my gateway into saying I have actual depression and that PMDD doesn't last for months at a time. That's not how it works. It's definitely heightened during those times. And there's times I've gone years without feeling depressed, just having my PMDD moments. So that was my start, and it instantly started helping. She told me it might take a few months. And the first one, I went in like, it's probably not going to work, but let's be positive. Maybe I can at least get a placebo effect. Like, let's just mind over matter, baby. And the first one, I was like, I feel down, but I don't feel as down. Maybe this was a good period. Then the next month, I was like, I feel pretty good. And she put me on other supplements. She's kind of like a hybrid holistic doctor.
Okay.
So I like my period started being less painful. Then I started feeling less low. And then probably 4 months in, I had a dip again. I was like, oh, it's not working. And then I realized it was kind of getting delayed, where instead of the first few days of my period feeling, or before my period feeling really depressed, it'd be like the mid to the end, I would have those moments. So I think that the way I'm getting on and off of it, it's kind of delaying the depression.
Got it.
So my next step is talk to her, which I've been putting off. Reminder to self. I should just be on them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I will preach all day, every day. Like, it's okay to have to take something. Like, just like you would expect to take something if you broke a bone, take something if your brain chemicals aren't right.
Yeah.
But I can't take that advice myself. It took me so long to be like, this little pill, it's not a big deal. It's okay. It's 5 milligrams, but
I feel the same way. I'm like,
so hard.
Such a proponent of like, do it, do whatever you have to. And, but it's so
like, you do it.
I know.
Not me though.
Just for you. And yeah. I think because I think my hesitation is because I've seen myself with just a really regimented routine.
Yeah.
And mushrooms. I don't need medicine. I just need mushrooms. But like, yeah, that's not sustainable, Mal. We can't take mushrooms every day.
Both. Why not have like your routine that you know works and generally keeps you in a really good place?
Yeah.
And then also a little bit of help from an antidepressant. And like for me, I was really worried about the side effects and what I was going to feel. I was on ADD medication for a little bit, which I actually think my ADD is more of a symptom of depression, but that's a whole nother story. And they made me feel awful. I hated it, which scared me to do antidepressants at all. But I felt no different. It's such a small amount. The only thing I felt was not wanting to kill myself.
I love that.
Not that that's funny, but
when you go to the doctor, I'm going with Cammie. We're going to go together to the PMDD doctor.
Yeah. It really is life changing to realize like, I don't have to live like this.
Yeah.
I can just not feel down and numb. You don't have to do that.
Yeah.
And I will say it also did help with the pre-outburst as well. So,
okay.
You guys might want to look into that.
But still, it's like, I'll make the appointment. Yeah.
Because that's tough, and it's so embarrassing whenever you act out of how you normally would. You're like, I'm not like this.
Yeah.
It's not fun.
Yeah.
But it's the hormones and the brain. And
luckily, we have good partners. The previous ones were not putting up with that shit.
No.
They were fighting back.
You're like, oh, shit. Uh-oh. I can't get away with this. Yeah, having a good support system is everything.
Huge. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What advice do you have for someone who's struggling with their mental health?
I think I would say don't go at it alone. Mm-hmm. You don't have to. You're not a burden to your friends or your family. They can't be the only solution, but it's definitely the first step, especially if you're someone like us who doesn't want to kind of take those next steps. Just talking about it. And talk about it with yourself, talk about it with your friends, talk about it with your family, because that can also help them. They might have the exact same experience, and that is so nice to feel less alone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that.
Thanks.
So I know this whole thing has felt like therapy.
It's been amazing. Saves me so much money this week.
But what are you working on in therapy?
Currently nothing. I'm looking for a new therapist.
Oh, tell me about the journey.
So my last therapist fired me because she was like, you're good. And I was like, I'm not good. You're just not probing. I need you to like dig a little.
This happened to Matilde too. Instead of fire, she said, you've graduated. I said,
okay. I'm like, don't you want my money? I mean, we were vibing. She was like one of my friends in that moment. I really enjoyed chatting with her, but that's what it felt like, as much advice as a friend would give.
Yeah.
And I am hyper self-aware in therapy. I'm amazing. I'm like best version of myself. I've never met that girl in my life, but I'm like, I'll talk about a fight I've had with Taryn in therapy. And I'm like, yes, well, this is what I did wrong. Let's talk about that first. I'm like, you dumb bitch. You were just yelling at her 10 minutes ago. What are you even saying right now? But it makes it, I think I'm a really hard patient because of that, because they're like, girl, you got it. You're so level headed. I'm like, but how do I bring this into day to day?
Yes. You so see a that. Different version. That is exactly how I go into therapy. And I'm like, Andrea, all right, I know exactly what we need to work on today.
Yeah. I'm like, I run that shit. I'm like, I'm doing your job.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I then need why are we like such psychos outside of therapy? Like, what happened?
What's wrong with us?
If our therapist saw us outside of therapy,
she'd be so scared.
She'd be like, actually, now I think you have double some sort sessions. Of disorder.
Double sessions. You have everything. Holy shit.
So we're searching for a new therapist.
Yeah.
I love
Hit
it.
Me up, anybody.
Yeah. Sometimes that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
Is finding someone who, and those conversations are brutal.
You have to like do it all. I want to write a little book of like the beginning phases and just like hand it to a therapist and be like, you read this, you let me know if we feel like
you're studying.
Because I can't keep going through all this. I had a call with a potential therapist. It was like 5-minute intro calls. And the first thing she said, so do you have any trauma?
Oh my God.
I was like, I panicked. I just said, no. Yes. Why do you think I'm here? Isn't that a given?
That was crazy. Oh my God. Well, good luck on your journey.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You haul or you ghost?
Oh my God. I'm so excited for this one. Okay.
All right. They constantly reference Shrek like incessantly.
You haul.
Me too.
Wait,
I love
so
Shrek.
Funny. I love Shrek. I'm like, that's my wife. I married it. I love it. That's incredible.
I agree.
Keep doing it.
Their browser history is suspiciously incognito heavy.
Oh, you ghost? Is that the term? You ghost. No, what are we hiding?
What's in there?
That's weird. I don't care if I find weird shit, but let's not hide the weird stuff.
Yeah.
No. If it's incognito, mm-mm.
I think that's fair. Mm-mm. And probably the stuff that we're hiding is like fucking weird.
Yeah. Yeah. And you already think I'm going to go through your phone then? No.
Yeah.
Toxic. Run.
I agree. Okay. They talk on the phone and speaker in public places.
I feel like you guys are calling out my wife. I feel like she does do that.
Okay, but I do too.
I'm going to you ghost it still.
Oh my God, Taryn.
I don't know if she does. No, you know what she does? She does like the talk to text, like an old woman. And that makes me want to fling my ring across the room. I'm like, you got to stop. It has to stop. You can text. You have fingers. Yeah, it would bug me, but I would change them. So we can still you all.
I can change you. Sometimes when I'm in the grocery store.
Oh, but there are other people in the grocery store.
I'm not thinking about that, to be honest.
And that's a red flag. Okay, I'm ghosting, that's actually. Fair. I changed my mind. Out of there. Yeah, that's scary.
Tell everybody where they can find you. Tell us about your podcast.
Across all social media, Cami Scott. Kept it very easy, neutral. And then I have a podcast with my wonderful wife, Taryn, called Staying Up Podcast with Cami and Taryn, where we just share married life and chit-chat. It's like a big sleepover.
So cute.
It's
I love
super
it.
Fun.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
To what?
Depression. Or not having antidepressants. Cheers to you getting on antidepressants. Or whatever works for you. No pressure. This episode is sponsored by Lexapro.
Thank y'all for listening to today's episode. As always, help us spread the gay agenda by writing an Apple review, rating us on Spotify, and sharing with everyone you've ever met. You can find today's guest at Cami Scott, our show at Made It Out Podcast, and me at Mal Glowinki. Made It Out is produced and edited by Matilde Jordan and worked on solely by lesbians.
LGBTQ. Lesbian, lesbian, gay, 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 gay. Corinthians 3.0. don't even know that how the numbers work.